You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 1st of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're focusing on alternatives and considering why they are so important for a well-diversified portfolio in a low-return world. We'll look at real estate and private equity, amongst other themes, and get the outlook for some of these key areas. We start with Matthias Vetch, who's responsible for the distribution of private market investment opportunities within UBS Wealth Management. Matthias explains why alternatives are so essential.
Well, I think as you alluded to it, if you look at the current environment, you know, the yields are obviously extremely low, and a lot of the asset values have gone up quite significantly. You look at the stock market, you look at real estate prices that have recovered quite significantly. So you need to look for alternatives to find some value. And ultimately, what we're seeing is some of these very skilled managers are finding very, very good opportunities to actively create value by working with the assets, by working with their companies to improve operations, to turn around situations. And in addition to the active value element, they're also finding niches where there is much less competition, because in many ways, these are much more complex transactions. So from a demand-supply side, the return expectations are actually quite more attractive.
Cyril Demaria is Executive Director in charge of private market research at the Chief Investment Office of UBS. He explains why alternatives are a key strand and how they're now more important than ever.
Motivated notably the fact that yields have been coming down lately. It's not a surprise to anyone that interest rates are rather low. And of course, investors willing to achieve a certain level of returns are looking at alternatives. And this is one of the ways, because notably of market inefficiencies and other aspects such as illiquidity, notably for private markets, which are driving potentially higher returns home.
Bob Swarup, the financial commentator and investor and author of Money Mania, says the significance of this class isn't exactly a new issue.
Well, I think for most investors, part of the problem they actually have is that the portfolio they always used to have, the traditional portfolio, hasn't worked very well the last few years. And I think when people run out of options, they start looking for other answers. And so alternatives comes into the fray. The irony, of course, is if you go look back at history, alternatives are actually much older than what we call traditional assets. I mean, long before you had public stock markets and public bond markets, you had private transactions going on all the time between people. You know, go back to the colonization of the New World, for example, or, you know, medieval England. You know, that was private equity all the way through. Go back to Roman times, you know, people were lending each other money all the time. So, you know, actually all we're really seeing in some ways a return to people actually thinking a little bit more entrepreneurially and a bit more outside the box of what they can actually do. And perhaps the most important differentiator about alternatives is that very often it's more about active risk management rather than simply passively taking a risk and hoping for the best.
Simon Smiles is UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth.
Well, we live in an increasingly low yield world, a world where a whole range of sovereigns in Europe now have negative yields. Given this, investors have to expand their horizons, their investment universes, if you will, and alternates within that paradigm, you know, play an increasingly important part in a portfolio.
What about real estate? One particularly interesting area. Here are the insights of Thomas Verragut, an economist in the UBS Chief Investment Office. He stresses how crucial the cycle is when it comes to real estate investment.
First of all, I think you will look just at the cycle and where we are in the cycle. That's very important. And I think we just can think that this cycle where we are in now has begun 2009, 2010. So, and this is, I think, something that is around the world quite similar. Since then, we had a very strong yield compression, meaning a very strong increase in values again after the financial crisis. And this means that we already have seen in many countries at the forefront in the US and UK already a quite strong rebound in real estate investment.
What about some practical considerations for investing in real estate? Yield is critical, especially initial yield, according to Thomas.
The most important important is to look at your yield, and especially your initial yield, so the yield you get when you buy a new properties now in the market. And here, it will strongly depend where you will buy this property and what is the kind of the quality of the property you want to buy. We know that just because the cycle already down some way up in the very big cities around the world, like London or New York, and also Tokyo, for example, or Singapore and Hong Kong, that the yields have already come down quite significantly. So for the very best prime properties, you will have already to pay quite high price that will give you a yield of around 4% or even less. So very practically is that if you want more yield, you will have today to take a little bit more risk and go just to the periphery from the central business district, or even go leave your A city and go to B city of high quality.
And what are the recent trends in real estate that Bob Swarup has identified as the most interesting?
Well, real estate has mushroomed again. I mean, traditional real estate, of course, was just buying property. If you look around right now, people started looking at other aspects. So, for example, distressed property has become quite a big thing, particularly look at Florida, for example, in the last few years. People started doing direct lending to real estate. So if you look at a lot of developers, they can't actually borrow money anymore, particularly in Spain, in some aspects, even in the UK. And so you have private firms now lending money to them, sometimes even via crowdfunding as a way of accessing higher returns. So real estate is changing. I mean, alternative is that, if I go back to my original point, alternative really isn't doing something new. It's doing the same old stuff, but thinking outside the box and saying, you know, is there a different way of doing it? Because the old way is not working anymore. Beyond real estate, of course, there is a wider space developing, which you may call real assets. So farmland, timber, mining infrastructure, mining royalties. These are all rapidly growing. I mean, again, you have to be, I think, careful. You have to do your research. You know, the danger you have right now is in a world where there is such low growth, people will pay almost any price for growth. And I think that's the single biggest risk most investors run, which is the jump on the latest fad. Because an alternative, it seems to be great, we'll make money out of it, and then actually at the end of the day, you suddenly find that you get burnt along with the rest of them.
Still to come on The Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at private equity, consider the benefits for investors, and assess the outlook for this sector. When it comes to private equity and private markets, what are some of the fundamental factors? Matthias Vetch gives us his considered outlook for private equity.
I think if you follow our CIO, and certainly we're pretty much aligned with it, we see that on sort of the traditional, particularly large buyout, the prices have gone up quite significantly, as I mentioned in the beginning. One of the main reasons obviously being that leverage is so broadly available and so cheaply available. So that's certainly something, an area where we're a bit more cautious on it. One of the themes that we've been playing and that we continue to play is certainly the topic around European bank deleveraging, and that can be either in the form of investing in distressed debt providers that buy non-performing pools of loans from the banks or in other participants, but it can also be in the shape of direct lending, so investing in funds that ultimately provide debt capital to small and medium-sized enterprises, which is an area where the banks have been pulling out and have been retreating, but that offers quite an attractive risk-return profile.
In terms of the private equity space, what does Bob Swarup have to say? He strikes a note of caution.
I think people have to be careful sometimes of the tag alternative. The alternative isn't always necessarily better. There is that implicit belief that somehow if I go for the alternative, that's it, I've solved my problems. Private equity is a very broad tag. I mean, for example, if I said to you, you should go invest in mutual funds, that is not a recommendation. That is a suggestion that that's an area where you might find some good ideas. Go do your research. Private equity is very similar. Huge, huge scope. Many different strategies, many different areas of interest and so on. The outlook, I think, is interesting because, you know, if you look at right now, we have a huge amount of uncertainty in the world. And, you know, perhaps the easiest thing to do is to almost ignore the next 5 years, look very far out and say, you know, what does the world look like in 10 years' time? And do I want to take some bets around that? And I think private equity allows people to do that. Having said that, while the pitfalls at the moment is that there's been so much money pouring into private capital simply because interest rates have been so low, people actually don't have any return elsewhere in the public markets, that there's a danger that there's too much money in there. I mean, look at the new tech bubble that's emerged in social networking and, you know, all sorts of apps and things like that. Look at, for example, the huge growth of P2P and crowdfunding, where as far as I can tell, every other day someone's setting up a new crowdfunding platform. you have to be careful because there will be some good ideas in there, but equally there'll be a lot of ones that will actually end up being highly disappointing and painful for investors in the long run.
There's perhaps something of an assumption here that private equity investments are the preserve of the ultra-high net worth individual. Not so, though, says Cyril Demaria.
Private equity and private markets at large are illiquid, so it means that when you're in for the long term, meaning minimum 5 to 10 years. And so when you consider your future prospects, you have to be quite knowledgeable and careful in your assessments of future situations in terms of macroeconomy, of course, but also the relative evolutions of different geographical areas. So that's actually a little bit the challenge for investors at the moment. What's my own conviction about the evolution of Western Europe or the US, but also certain emerging markets? And if I want to invest in certain geographies, what's the best strategy? Is it through equity? Is it through debt? Is it through real assets? And all this, of course, can be broken down into different risk-return profiles. So you see, it's like a pyramid of choices, if you wish. You start from a very simple question, and then it can trickle down very precisely, very specific niches which are adjusted for your portfolio and your risk appetite and your illiquidity tolerance.
Does Simon Smiles agree that this is not simply a realm for the super wealthy?
No, I don't think so. I think direct investment in a large scale is often the purview of the super wealthy, but private equity and the pooled nature of many of the private equity opportunities actually lend themselves for high net worth individuals as well as ultra high net worth individuals.
In the longer term, and when we look at the bigger picture, some rebalancing of the yield structure is likely. But what's the picture for private equity? Cyril Demaria again.
QBS, we have some views, of course, as you know, about the future and notably the macroeconomic perspectives. And it means that as soon as the interest rates will rise again in the US, of course, it's going to rebalance a little bit the yield structure across the portfolio. So what does it mean to answer your question for private markets? It means that, yes, you're right, on the mid to long term, it's not going to swing the balance dramatically, but it will readjust some factors. So it also means that when an asset class has been growing as it did, for example, for private equity in terms of collection of capital, it has been maturing. And this maturity, meaning a reduction of imperfection of information and market asymmetries, once these factors have been reduced, they are not going to grow back again, if you see what I mean. So it means that the capital has been there, the market has been more efficient in terms of private equity investments and private markets. And so going forward, we won't see this coming back in the sense that private equity will exploit other inefficiencies or other market opportunities. But as soon as the yield goes down in private equity, it doesn't really go back up, or it can be, let's say, short-term or market even, but not necessarily on the structural perspective.
It is, after all, a low-return world we're currently dealing with. So are investors perhaps becoming more cavalier? Here's Bob Swarup.
Cavalier would be one way of putting it. Desperate would be a better way. I mean, we all have something called a hedonic bias, which is that if we're not moving forward, if we're just standing still, we become very, very unhappy. The same thing applies to investments. Well, the other thing you got to remember is that beyond the average investor on the street or the high net worth individual even, the biggest pool of investment money out there are pension funds and insurance companies. Now, for both of them, they actually have liabilities, money that they have to pay out either as pensions or as claims. And in the current low interest rate environment, those numbers are huge for them. So they are desperate to make returns. And so they are perhaps the two biggest pools of money that are rapidly running into alternatives. And, you know, that, as I said, is where people have to be wary. You know, for me, one of the things that I think every investor in alternatives or anywhere should watch out for is look at what other people are doing. If there's too much of a crowd running into something, then history tells you that usually the valuations are going to become too high. You're better off going almost to an area where the crowd hasn't quite arrived just yet.
And finally, what does Simon Smiles make of the longer-term picture?
I'm finding clients are increasingly talking to us about longer-term investments, things which they can be more certain of on a 5- and 10-year basis. And that also, these kind of long-term investment opportunities also very much lend themselves to private equity or direct investment style structures.
That was Simon Smiles bringing us to the end of this 21st edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.